recap.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio. It's SB Nation AM on a Friday. NBA Eastern Conference Finals. It's Toronto up 3-2, waiting to see if they can close it out Saturday night in Toronto. Otherwise, they go back to Milwaukee for Game 7. NHL Stanley Cup Finals start on Monday. I said earlier, I think the better story of the two is the NHL. I think the St. Louis Blues and with the way those fans are reacting to this team going from last place to the Western Conference champs, Boston waiting for another duck boat parade. I think it's a better story than the Warriors continuing a dynasty that we've already learned to deal with and whether or not Toronto or Milwaukee gets in. I mean, listen, Toronto and Milwaukee are good teams, good players, fun to watch. They're outside of maybe Giannis and Kawhi's individualism, they don't really draw you in yet. That Milwaukee team is going to take a few years. Giannis, people have already kind of attached themselves to him, like watching him play, but as a team, it's going to take a few years. Toronto, we've had our ups and downs with Toronto over the years. We've had our ups and downs with Drake over the years. Let's go to Anthony in Florida, who has an interesting question about biopics. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yes. What would be your biopic on what athlete? Mine would be the M&M boys, the Maris and Mantle. Like the biopic on both of them. What do you think about that? And what athlete would you like to see in a biopic that Hollywood could do well?
Ooh, good question. Because I like these kind of things. I actually dig them. I'm more of a documentary guy than like a Hollywood script. Because, like I've said before, Hollywood tends to just over-dramatize a lot of things. And I've seen a number of them over the years. You know, Rudy's probably the most famous one. Would a biopic about Tiger Woods be interesting, Ron?
Maybe not yet.
Not yet?
Not yet. But I think it definitely would be interesting because the guy did change the face of golf.
Yeah.
But I think there's still more to the story that needs to be written.
The problem is, you know, I'm going to get to this coming up next, because I think I hit on something. One of the things that you want in a biopic, as far as Hollywood is concerned, is you want a journey, right? You want a dark side to the story. You don't just want, you know, all roses and palm trees. There's got to be some conflict. There's got to be something that plagues that athlete. There's a couple of ideas. We'll have that coming up next.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, on Twitter at Tony D Radio and at Ron Culver. And that's Ron with two N's, please. Anthony made a good question, like a biopic. Who would you want to see in Hollywood take their story and make a movie out of it? Which athlete? He said Maris and Mantle, but we already have that, don't we? With Billy Crystal's 61?
61.
Wasn't that already done?
Yeah, so not a bad film.
Tiger Woods would be interesting, but you're right. I think it needs a few more years to really process everything. More story to it.
Or would you do a Tiger versus Phil biopic, kind of similar to like what Maris and Mantle?
There wasn't really a Tiger versus Phil, though, that level. Phil never really... It never became...
Yeah, he was the bridesmaid. You just call it Bridesmaids, part two.
Yeah. The one thing, like Peyton Manning doesn't have a dark side, or does he? Right? Like, there doesn't seem to be... Like, I don't want a biopic on Peyton Manning if it's just going to be, I spent 1 year with my neck injury. I need you to be like...
Need more.
I overcame something really dark and horrible that nobody knew about.
If those times in Tennessee actually proved to be true, then maybe.
Maybe, but that got big. That was a bigger deal way afterwards than at the time it went down. Like, I don't remember Peyton getting in.
I don't remember that being the talk of anything.
What about this one? How about a biopic on Yasiel Puig's journey from wherever he came from to America?
Not bad. Not bad. That's pretty good.
Did he come from Cuba or something like that? But it had to go through, like, I think he was, didn't he say he was kidnapped at one point?
Yeah, let's do that. That sounds like a fun. That sounds like a fun one.
That's a fun one.
Yeah, let's do that one.
That sounds uplifting and spirited.
What about LeBron?
Where's the struggle?
The only thing he had was when he was a villain. That 1 year, people hated him, but that's not
that
enough.
1 year.
That's not enough.
I mean, I guess that would be based on his decision. Like, I guess
Tom Brady's life is got nothing.
That'd be a boring piece.
I dumped Bridget Moynihan and dated a supermodel from Brazil.
And
then
married
we got married
her,
and had kids.
And she makes more, three times as much as I do.
Yep, she makes a lot more money than I do.
I don't even need this quarterback job.
Oh, and I'm 41 years old, and I'm playing in another Super Bowl.
Yeah, he has probably documentaries upon documentaries. Plus, he probably has this infomercial on TB12.
Just when you think we're out, we're in. Just when you think the dynasty's over, we win another one.
Yeah, it was the dark time that we just can't get past the Giants.
Oh, goodness.
We face the Giants in the Super Bowl, we lose.
There really isn't anybody off the top of my head now that's got a dark enough story attachment to it. What about Ryan Leaf?
That's interesting.
Ryan's doing some great stuff. He has really turned his life around. I really like talking to him at the Super Bowl.
All right, dude. So let's branch it out a little bit more. What about, is there a certain team that would kind of fit the mold?
You know what I always thought? I always thought a movie about, and we talked about this team yesterday, the movie about the early 90s Duke Blue Devils with Leitner, I always thought would be fascinating. If you could get me a tell-all book on what that was really like with the craziness that was around that team, Leitner's attitude at times, Hurley's attitude at times. At one time, Krzyzewski, they got in a fight. Like, Hurley and Leitner got in a fight, and Krzyzewski let him, play it out because he wanted Bobby to be such a leader. And then Christian didn't give him any crap after that. Like that kind of stuff is, I think, would be cool. I think that would be a good one. What about how about the Mets of 86? Jeff Perlman wrote a great book about that Mets dynasty that never happened.
Yeah.
Right? Remember that?
Because there was a lot of darkness involving that team. Not so much maybe during that season, but the years to follow, the years leading up. Dwight Gooden and Daryl Strawberry tells a fantastic story about the first time he ever used cocaine was on a plane.
With the Mets?
With the Mets.
Wow.
He was a rookie brought to the back of the plane, and they threw it in front of his face, and he needed to fit in. He wanted to be included.
Oh, God. Think about the spiral.
Yeah.
Trek that led him.
And then he became best friends with Dwight Gooden. We all know. I mean, you're looking at two players who would have been first ballot Hall of Famers. Easily. Without, drugs didn't get in the way.
Yeah, that's true. Jeff Perlman's book on that Mets team, that Mets era, was called The Bad Guys Won. Or something along those lines. I mean, that's just the title of it tells you something. Michael on Twitter, how about John Daly? Yeah, how about John Daly? How can I forget? Wow, how did that bypass me? John Daly would have a great story. John Daly's story is awesome, because here's a couple of things about Daly. First, Daly, as we mentioned last week, instead of the PGA, he won the PGA as an alternate. He had to drive all night to Carmel, Indiana to play a crooked stick. When Nick Price withdrew from the tournament, he won the tournament. He got instant fame. But do not overlook the 1995 British Open. And winning that open, he was shaken. He was dealing with some withdrawal stuff. I mean, he ended up steadying himself enough to capture a claret jug, winning at St. Andrews.
But here's my only thing with a John Daly movie. Doesn't that need to be premiered in a bar?
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, kind of.
I would it'd be justice. You got to have a movie screen inside of a bar.
They did a 30 for 30 on John, but I don't want that. I want an actor playing John Daly going through all of the unbelievable drama of fame, celebrity, money, and just having a reckless kind of personality in and of itself.
I think Jeff Daniels could play
I think so. That's a good idea. That is a good idea.
I mean, it's funny. I mean, we only think of him, a lot of times we think of him as a comedic actor, but he's a really good serious actor.
Yeah. Yeah. He was good in The Newsroom on HBO. Remember that?
Yeah.
Remember that show? He was good in that.
Well, I mean, everyone knows that one clip.
The beginning. Why isn't America great? I don't know if I like the answer, but
no, I know, but I mean that thing was viral beyond viral.
Yeah, because everyone was like, "We're not so great. Look at this. Look at this actor in a TV show written by a guy who wanted to make a point. It's so true."
Yep.
Yeah, Aaron Sorkin's a good writer, but you know, not everything he's not writing the Bible, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Jeff Daniels as John Daly would be great. That's
That'd
a good
be
one.
Fun. You'd probably want to do it too. But I honestly think once the story is finished, Tiger would be the best because he has that stereotypical Hollywood storyline. No, I mean, he came from humble beginnings, but had instant fame as a kid. I mean, you could start off the movie just showing old news clips of him, like actual news clips of him appearing on, you know, whether it was, why am I forgetting the guy's name? The talk show.
Oh, Mike Douglas.
Mike Douglas. Thank you.
Yep.
Whether he's appearing with Mike Douglas or, you know, just the little news snippets that they did of him outside of a golf course, because you can certainly find those readily available. Then show him actually, you know, doing, you know, rising to the top, obviously the fall. But then your triumphant moment right now, and you could do it probably now, thinking about it, because his triumphant moment right now is the Masters.
Yeah, it may not get any better than that.
It may not. I mean,
he may not. I mean, who knows?
He might have written a perfect story already to have it filmed.
But leaving a voicemail on his girlfriend's phone. What a dum-dum. Taking the dum-dum juice. That's not cool. Don't do that. Yeah, but he's got a great... I mean, you're right. I mean, he's having sex with everybody all over the place, cheating on his wife, falls down into a pit of hell, right? That Thanksgiving weekend, and we all... Remember he came out and did that press conference a few months later, a week, whatever it was, and, oh, God. I mean, it was just a really rough time for him. But you're right, from the time he had to live up to expectations. And I just would hope, because I know the story of Earl Woods. I hope the story doesn't make Earl Woods this lunatic Marv Marinovich type of dad, because he wasn't like that. He really took Tiger's talent and honed it, but he didn't do crazy, crazy stuff. Like, he didn't yell at Tiger and, you know, go hit 12 buckets of balls. And he always put school first. Like, Tiger had to get good grades before he could even play golf. Like, so I think he molded Tiger. Like, it's funny, because I always used to tell my wife this. I was like, if our kids were gifted in a way that people just knew, right? Like, at a young age, they were like, oh my God, your kid's got a talent for this, or your kid's got a super talent for that. Am I capable of honing that? Like, am I capable of helping them achieve that? Because I always wonder, is every single person that is good at sports good at sports? Or are there people who could have been good at sports, just nobody got to them? No, nobody. They never found it in themselves, and nobody else found it in them. But Tiger Woods' dad knew, like, that, you know, you got a little kid, 2 years old, 3 years old, swinging a ball and hitting the center of a mat that you put in your garage at three, you got something special, but you got to hone that. Like, you got to find a way to make sure that he capitalizes on that. And he did a good job. Yeah, he did a really good job.
I mean, like you said, I mean, he didn't go full Richard Williams.
Yeah.
On it, where, you know, where you almost turn it about you. Like, look what I've created. Look what I've done. Look what I did. And I had the superstar. I mean, Earl Woods was always, you know, a background figure. He was prominent, but he was a background figure.
Yeah, he did go a little loony with "My Son Will Change the World" and like going that extra Jesus mile. But at the same time, I mean, I don't know. He really thought that if you have a personality that like Tiger, right, that people could idolize, and yet he was different. He, you know, because of his heritage, he wasn't the typical country club kid golfer that we had grown accustomed to. That he could make people and inspire people and use his power to move governments in different ways. He thought, because we got to remember, Earl Woods came from a time of Muhammad Ali, right? Where Muhammad Ali was doing or at least was trying to do those kind of things with his celebrity and his fame. Like, Muhammad Ali went to Iraq to free hostages in the early 90s. Like, Earl saw that and said, listen, if my son is a golfer, reaches that point of worldwide fame and notoriety, he should be doing those things too. Like, he should be meeting with world leaders and talking about these issues, these world issues. Tiger just said, nah, it's not really my bag. I'm not really interested in that.
Right. You know who could, first person that came to mind that could play Tiger, I think would do a good job of it? Donald Glover.
Donald Glover could play Tiger?
Yeah.
As an old man?
No. Yeah, Donald Glover, not Danny Glover.
I'm thinking Danny Glover.
Yeah, you're thinking of Danny Glover.
Who's Donnie Glover, real quick?
He was Lando Calrissian in Solo.
Oh, yeah.
From,
okay.
Atlanta.
Yeah. Now I know who it is. Yeah.
Gambino. I'm already forgetting what the.
Yes. No, you're spot on. You're 100%
especially
on.
Especially the scenes where, you know, Tiger is hitting up the waitresses, you know, having all the sex. I think Donald Glover could play that perfectly.
That's right. That's true.
He has that swag that I think Tiger never really showed on the golf course because a certain decorum dictates the way he needs to play. But you would see it spill out every once in a while, you know, especially in that fist bump. You know, you could tell that he had this certain swag that I wish maybe we could see, you know, in a bar-like atmosphere.
All right, so that's a good one.
That is a really good one.
That is a good one. Let's talk travel. Most of us do a little travel throughout the year. How are you booking your hotel rooms? Well, I got a suggestion for you, besthotelrates.com. Besthotelrates.com have negotiated special rates with over 600,000 hotels worldwide and extended the discounts to you. Simply go to besthotelrates.com, plug in your destination, dates of travel, and voila, you're looking at a discount rate for many of the hotels that you could pay more for somewhere else. Save your money, book your hotels through besthotelrates.com. That's besthotelrates.com. It's SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, glad you can be with us here on SB Nation Radio. Well, O'Reilly Auto Parts, you're guaranteed to get the everyday low price on the parts you need, and they'll match any local auto parts store price on any like item. O'Reilly Auto Parts has the parts you need at a guaranteed low price. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Juwan Howard said on his show on ESPN that he thinks that the hiring of Juwan Howard is going to bring the Fab Five closer and bring them back together. I hope that is true. He said, quote, people have gotten a chance to see us at the highest of heights and our lowest of lows, and they've seen some discord. I've just got to acknowledge this on a national television. Those days are over. Not seeing eye to eye. There will not be any disrespect to the program. There'll be not any sideshows. There will not be any frictions amongst the Fab Five. We're about to all come together and make sure we do what we got to do to put us back on top of the map. I love it. I like the Fab Five. I was captivated by them when they were playing in the early 90s. I'm glad, you know, listen, when you get a group together, and I don't care what it is, it's hard to not go your separate ways. It's hard not to have some friction. It's hard, especially when you're doing something like that, like you're playing basketball, where there is blame or there is ill will or there's going to be friction. It's just a natural progression of things. And I'm sure that Chris Webber would love for it all to come together again, too. I know he has had problems with Jalen Rose in the past. This hiring of Juwan Howard can mean the resurrection of the Fab Five as Michigan players and not as individuals that have gone on to their own either A, NBA legacy, or A, doing something else. I mean, Chris Webber has carved himself a very, very nice career in the NBA as a broadcaster. Same thing with Jalen Rose. Juwan Howard had a great NBA career. He's now a head coach. To bring in Ray Jackson, to bring in Jimmy King, to bring in the five guys and bring them together and elevate themselves and Michigan basketball for Michigan basketball, I think it's a great thing. These guys were so influential in the sport. And we talked about it when Juwan Howard got hired. You know what, though? There's something I don't want to overlook on this. Listen, when I moved to Denver, I was a sports, I became a sports director at this radio station, and I didn't know anything about Denver sports. And it's a hard position to be in when you are, you know, you're going to be talking about Denver sports on a consistent basis and all that. And so you've got to learn the ropes really quick. And I got in the summer. And so I was already embedded in the Rocky season. So the Broncos I was trying to get into, and the Avalanche I was trying to get into, because those were teams that were making the playoffs. The Nuggets were trash. They were terrible. And yet, because I like the NBA, I was trying to get to know who the Nuggets players were. And Juwan Howard was the one that stood out. And I'll never forget that early in the career, Juwan Howard organized this coat drive. And you would bring a coat to the Pepsi Center office and you would get a ticket to a game. All you had to do was bring a coat, any coat, and there was a ticket. You could have a ticket to the game. And I remember when Juwan Howard spoke at this. So he's a player on the team and he's going through his warmups and there's a good crowd because it's a free ticket, right? You bring a coat, get a free ticket. He's talking to the crowd. And I remember thinking, this is a leader. Like, this is a guy that really gets it. Like, he's a statesman. He really is taking this community and thanking them for everything and talking about his plans and on this or that. And we're going to do this for these kids. And we're going to be working on this. If you want more information, go to this place and whatnot. And I remember instantly liking Juwan Howard. Michigan is not doing this for nostalgic purposes. They are not doing this so the Fab Five can come together and they can relive glory days. They are not doing this because they want to tap in to when Michigan basketball was not only on top of the world, but on top of the entertainment world as well, as these guys were, you know, making college basketball and Michigan basketball go beyond its normal barriers, entering the entertainment world, getting celebrities to buy into what they're doing, to watch them, to talk about them as if they were as equal celebrities as well. Michigan's not doing that. Juwan Howard, and while there may be questions of he has never been a coach before, he's never recruited before, Juwan Howard should be a coach and should get a shot at coaching. Now, you could argue that the stage that John Beilein is leaving is big and it's hard. It's a tough shoe to fill, but they're not doing this strictly on nostalgic levels. The byproduct of hiring a guy like Juwan Howard, who has been an assistant in the NBA, who knows basketball, who, yes, it's a steep learning curve to get the recruiting down, to get the NCAA rules and regulations down, to understand the ebbs and flows of now building a schedule around your team and what you're going to be doing and how you're going to pace yourselves during the season in the Big Ten. The byproduct of that is that you get the Fab Five, as Jalen Rose points out, to come together again. Now, that's the byproduct of it, but that's not the reason for it. At least it shouldn't be the reason for it. And I think Juwan Howard, if he had wanted to be a coach, if he had said, I'm ready to enter the coaching world of college basketball, would have landed somewhere. Maybe not at Michigan, but he would have landed somewhere. Because I think he comes across as being a very, very smart guy who understands how to do a job, even if he's not done it before, right? He can say, you know, I may not have been recruited, but I was recruited. I may not be a coach, but I'd been around enough of them, and I spent time on the Miami Heat bench to know basically how to do this, and I know basketball. And so I think the byproduct is you get what Jalen Rose is talking about.
I mean, how fantastic would that be? You just show up to practice one day. And then you look over and, like, there they all are, just suited up, ready to go in those pinstripes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So,
and it just so happens that a certain, you know, a few recruits might have been there that day, just, you know, by happen chance.
Yeah, that's right. Right. Visiting out. Very good. Very good. Yeah, I think it's, I hope, I really hope, like I said, it's a good win-win for everybody.
Yeah, I hope Juwan does well. I mean, you know, he's inheriting a decent program. So
really
that
is, really
for
is.
And it's not like the guy doesn't know basketball. I mean, he definitely has a good mind on it. It's just whether he can translate that.
Yep. Listen, you could be a smart basketball guy and fail at recruiting. You could be a smart basketball guy and fail at the ins and outs of the little things and that
coaching.
You have to do as a coach. Yeah. I mean, we've seen people listen, Chris Mullin. I mean, Chris Mullin's probably one of the smartest basketball minds that we had from, you know, in the day. He couldn't do it at St. John's.
Yeah.
His alma mater. He couldn't do it.
He's loved there.
Yep. And he couldn't do it.
Magic Johnson is a great recruiter. He just doesn't know that you can't do it in the NBA.
Exactly. And I remember I was critical, and I was critical of the Patrick Ewing hire, even though people told me, you got to understand, Patrick Ewing really knows what he's doing. I'm like, I don't know. We'll see.
So far, so good.
I always thought Patrick Ewing was a better NBA guy. If you wanted to hire him in the NBA, great. I didn't think college would, you know, the college game, recruiting and the different way of life, I didn't think was going to fit for Patrick, and so far so good. But Chris Mullin couldn't do it. But I think Juwan Howard can. And again, if the byproduct is that the Fab Five come together and celebrate Michigan basketball, I think it's going to be fun. SB Nation AM, Jeff Hammond coming up next.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM. Hey, what do you do for energy? Well, you grab an energy drink, and now you can do the same for sleep with SomSleep. Just drink a small can before you're ready to sleep, and you can use the promo code RADIO for 15% off your first purchase of SomSleep online at GetSom.com, and that's S-O-M, GetSom.com. Again, you can also available at Walmart, but if you go online to GetSom.com, use 15% off when you use the promo code RADIO. All right, we're going to be talking to Jeff Hammond, Fox Sports, coming up here on the Coca-Cola 600. How are you, Jeff?
Good morning, Tony. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. So let's give people a little primer on this race. It's 600 laps. It's 600 miles. It's the longest race on the circuit. Give me an idea of what people can expect with this race, from the sun setting, going from day to night, the length of the race, the track in and of itself. What makes this such a different and special kind of race?
Well, you hit about all the key points right there, because of the fact that we start in the sun in this particular weekend, at the time of the race, it's going to be over 90 degrees. Track temperatures are going to be 130 degrees. So you're going to go from a situation where the cars are real loose, track's real greasy. As it starts to cool off, as the sun goes down, track temperatures come down. You've got to keep up with changing your race car. And on top of that, you know, they got the stages everybody we're running now in NASCAR. So instead of having a normal, you know, two, we're going to go to three. So we're going to have an extra set of stages, which makes these guys realize more points are on the line. So they're going to have to race harder. The fact that coming off the All-Star race, there's a lot of guys that felt like they had good race cars there, but yet didn't go to victory lane. They got a point to prove. You know, guys like Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch, they felt like they had better cars than what Kyle Larson did, so they want to kind of vindicate themselves this coming, you know, Sunday. And, oh, by the way, Kyle Larson would like to take the momentum from the win in the All-Star event and parlay that into his first win in the regular point season of 2019, which a lot of drivers have done in the past when they've won the All-Star race. So there's a lot of up for grabs. A lot of these drivers, I mean, like I say, they feel like they got a point to prove. Anybody that was watching the All-Star event and any of the news and sports channels early in the week, you know, about the big brush blow-up between Clint Bowyer and Ryan Newman, those two guys right there would like to go to victory lane and prove that, look, you took my opportunity to win away and messed me up. So there's just so much on the line, and it's 600 miles, and you got to be physically and mentally as tough as a pine knot, we like to say around here, to be able to get the job done.
In terms of stamina, in terms of the ability to hang in there for those 600 miles, the addition of the stages, technological advances in the car, is the stamina the same, less, or more than it was, let's say, 20 years ago?
It is, but it's a different way. The cars have been sealed off, so they're extremely hot. We run a right side window, so you don't flow a lot of air through the car like we did back in the day. So all that's a very much a negative. So you're sitting there basically in a sauna for over 4 hours. So if you haven't prepared yourself, and I'm talking about, you know, hydrating really well, then all of a sudden, you know, the natural occurrence when you start sweating, once you sweat out, now all of a sudden your body's in jeopardy of not being hydrated enough, so all of a sudden you start giving up mentally and physically, and that can't happen, especially even though we got great technology today. The helmet coolers that so many of these drivers use from time to time will fail. So that could be one of the factors that gets you in trouble. So if you're not physically fit, you're definitely not going to make 600 miles come Sunday night. The other thing is, not that it happens a lot, these cars are equipped with power steering. But from time to time, the power steering will also fail. If that does, then you're going to have to physically manhandle this car, and that itself will also wear you out. So these are some of the contributing factors that we can't totally control. But they're always a concern as far as, like myself as a crew chief, you prepare. But sometimes you do have things that go bad wrong, and you've got to hope and pray that your driver has been in the gym, has been doing, you know, his nutrition properly. And also during the race, you know, he needs to continue to hydrate to make sure that if something does happen, you know, he's got some reserve there to fall back on.
If somebody would try to say what kind, like in the importance of the Coca-Cola 600, is it equivalent to like a golf major? Is it one of the premier jewels of the schedule?
Absolutely. When you think about at one time, the big four used to always be in the early days of NASCAR was Daytona, Darlington, Charlotte, and then Talladega. Now, when you look at it, we've included Indianapolis, so we kind of like got the big five. But Charlotte since really its inception, it has been the rival in a roundabout way with Daytona, but more importantly, it was a race that was designed to equal, to try to get, you know, attention on NASCAR against Indianapolis. And, you know, it's hung in there throughout the years as one of the more, fan attractants as far as Memorial Day weekend is concerned, along with Indianapolis. So, I mean, we have Memorial Day is the greatest day in racing. I don't know if you've heard that, but you start off with Monaco, you go to Indy, and you end it with Charlotte. It's a great day of racing.
Jeff, for as long as you've been in the sport and the changes that NASCAR makes, and I've always liked the fact that NASCAR is willing to change. They're not so stuck in tradition. They're willing to adjust. They're willing to try to find ways to make the sport interesting, more digestible for fans. Do you like a lot of the changes that are coming, the stages, the way the playoff works, all of the things that they're trying to do? Or are you more traditionalist and saying, hey, some of these things weren't really broken, so they really didn't need to be fixed?
No, I come from way back when. I mean, I started racing in like 1974. 73, 74 is when I was going to races. And I've watched all the progression through different points, different changes in cars, different changes in rules and regulations. And I think we're going down the right path because, let's face it, we live in a society. We want instant results. We want entertainment continuously. And a lot of times in the early days, we were a society, as far as NASCAR is concerned, of trying to make our equipment last, pace ourselves. And a lot of these races, I mean, they were long. It's like Coca-Cola 600. It's a long and a drawn-out event that can wear you out, you know, crew and driver. But the fans themselves, I think sometimes, you know, we're losing interest. So these, you know, new ideas, especially the stages, I think have made these drivers get up on the wheel and challenge their equipment more than ever. Now, we've got better equipment than we've ever had. You never talk about guys blowing engines like we did back in the 70s and the 80s and even the early 90s. You don't have failure with spindles and bearings and other components that we used to have. These cars are almost, and knock on wood, almost indestructible, except when you run them into the wall. So, you know, the drivers can drive them as hard as they need to. We've made the drivers better. So these races are actually being run at a faster pace than ever before. And I think these stages now have value to be able to make the playoffs. And that's what every team starts the season off wanting to achieve. You got to make the playoffs. It's no different than baseball, football, or basketball. It doesn't matter that what the regular season is. Do you wind up in the playoffs? And if you can do that through either pointing your way in or winning a race, then you've had a successful season. And that helps with sponsors. It helps with hiring better people. It helps keeping, you know, you're a good driver. All these things are very important, you know, to an owner and an organization. So, like this weekend, you got an extra chance to make extra points that could be the difference of you making the playoffs. I mean, we see it come down to the end of our regular season, where sometimes 4 or 5 points can really make the difference. And we've got an extra, you know, 10 points for whoever wins the stage on the line this coming Sunday night. So very important, and I like the ideas of these changes because I think it makes it fun for the fans. It also allows a lot better strategy by the crews. So I think there's a lot of intangibles that have been afforded to our sport with some of the changes that NASCAR has made. Now, is it perfect? No, I'm not going to say it's perfect, but we're trying to make it work and work right.
I used to, when I was in the, you know, covering sports in the 90s, and I remember there was a, when Tiger Woods was emerging, there was this, people would say, well, you know, Tiger Woods is the Jeff Gordon of golf, because Jeff Gordon was the, you know, dominating the sport. And it was, people had to kind of pause and go, yeah, I mean, the guy was winning double digit races. Does NASCAR have that guy in a Kyle Busch or a Brad Keselowski, or is the winning sort of getting more and more spread out?
You know, it depends on which year you're talking about. I mean, like last year we had what we called the Big Three,
yeah,
which included Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr. and Kevin Harvick. And each one of them, you know, were up there almost getting into double-digit numbers. But they won the majority of the races. About 75% or more won by these three drivers. But in the end, Joey Logano came through in the finale at Homestead, won the race, won the championship. So my point is, we've got guys that have the capability, like Kyle Busch, like Kevin Harvick, that can go up and win double digits and, you know, and maybe turn some heads. But what I like about it, it is kind of spread out. And last year we were represented, you know, by the fact those three guys, you know, had their fan bases, you know, pulling really, really hard for each other. And being able to support our sport in that way. Instead of just one guy, we had three.
Yeah.
And I think that's the good thing about it right now is we've got a Chase Elliott who's already got a win this year, you know, former son of Bill Elliott. And this young talent that's coming along, I think we're going to see more of it coming up, you know, like the start of the race on Sunday, William Byron, that superstar phenom that's driving for Hendrick Motorsports right now. He's starting to turn some heads. You know, won his way into the All-Star event last year. He's right on the edge of maybe breaking through, and he's a young man that's got a lot of class, a lot of talent, a great sponsor, and, you know, Liberty University is one of his sponsors. So, you know, you go down the line, William Byron, even Bubba Wallace, you know, African-American driver, you know, in the 43 car for Richard Petty, won a stage to get in the All-Star event also. All these younger drivers are starting to step forward and make a name for themselves. So I think you ask about Tiger Woods. Do we have a Tiger Woods? I think we got several Tiger Woods in our group currently, but we got a lot of, you know, young superstars. And I go back and I'll use another golf analogy, like, you know, like Koepka, Bruce Koepka, the golfer that kind of challenges, you know, Tiger from every now and then, and done a great job at some majors. I think we got young talent that's getting ready to kind of turn a lot of people's heads.
All right, one final question. Again, we're talking to Jeff Hammond, Fox Sports, and ready for the Coca-Cola 600 on Saturday. A race like this, is it a bet? Is it a safe bet to go with a veteran, a guy who's won it before, a guy who's raced on the track a lot, or go with the young guys, or does it matter?
My experience when it comes to Charlotte, go with the veteran. I think you'll see more veterans win that race than any other, because it does take an element, a strategy, and you do wind up pacing. Even at a faster pace, you need to know when to push it and when not to, because that extra 100 miles, again, can wear you out and your car out physically and mentally, and that can get you in a lot of trouble late in the stages. But I think a guy that can kind of realize what his car needs and can convey that to his crew chief, and they work together to make the right changes at the right time, is very critical in this event coming up. So my money, if I'm going to bet money, will be on a veteran.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, you're right. I think that extra 100 miles, that's an extra 20-25% than other races around the circuit. That's a fascinating point.
Well, it really is, and a lot of people, they lose sight of that, and that's when I think they get in trouble. I mean, it's hard to conceive an extra 100 miles, you know, an extra hour and 10 minutes of racing. But that's what we get into when you get into the 600 miles at Charlotte. I mean, it's a very grueling race, but it's the kind of race that you want to have that trophy sitting on in your trophy cabinet at the end of your career, because you know that you have now not only beat the best competitors, but you've been able to take on the toughest and the longest race on the stock car, as well as almost any circuit beside a 24-hour race there is.
Jeff, great stuff. Really appreciate it. Look forward to the race on Sunday. Great job on television, by the way, helping all of us understand the sport. Really appreciate it, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Great to talk to you guys, and appreciate you focusing on our great sport here in Charlotte come Sunday.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jeff Hammond on our Progressive Insurance Hotline on SB Nation Radio. Again, progressive.com for all your insurance needs. Get a great quote today at progressive.com. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about what Jeff said about the Coca-Cola 600 next on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
You know, it is true. There was a point where when Tiger Woods was winning majors early on, the NASCAR people would say, well, he's the Jeff Gordon of golf. Because Jeff Gordon was very, very much like Tiger Woods, a young kid. Young guy, racing since he was five, prodigy, was going to break onto the scene. And like Tiger Woods, where Tiger won like a Vegas tournament as a young man, but his real coming out party was winning. He turned pro in late 96 and won the 97 Masters, and that's when he burst onto the scene. Gordon's first win on the NASCAR, what was called the Winston Cup back then, was at the Coca-Cola 600, and he cried. And he got a lot of criticism for crying, because, you know, there's no crying in auto racing. But he ended up turning into being the most dominant figure in the sport. And he got booed everywhere he went. People always respected him for, you know what, I booed you, but man, you were the best driver I saw since Dale Earnhardt. Jeff is right in a way. There's a lot of those guys in Busch and Harvick that will win a lot of races. But look at some of the numbers Jeff Gordon posted up. Double digits, insanely dominant.